A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on April 21, 1996, in the series, I Do Believe, entitled, The News is Too Good Not to Tell. The scripture readings are Isaiah 49, verses 1 through 9, and John 9, verses 1 through 34. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 49, verse 6, and John 9, verses 5 and 25. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
During the season of Lent, it became almost spooky to me each week that I would take up the text and the theme that I had determined in early January, because it seemed as though I might have picked it precisely that week for the situation through which I was living. There was really no connection, humanly speaking, between the texts and the themes selected and the situation of my own life, and your life too. But that is not true during Eastertide, because it was while I was in the middle of the cauldron that I was having to determine the texts and the themes for the Eastertide series. And so this series is reflective of our situation. And the thing that came to me was the fact that with all of the sound bites and press coverage, Christ Community and myself personally have been characterized more by what we do not believe than by what we believe. And that really is quite unfair, because we do believe some things. And so I thought it would be good for us to hear some of the great affirmations of our faith lifted up in this Eastertide season. And I entitled the series, therefore, I Do Believe. I do believe, well, certainly as a personal witness, but not simply in myself, isolated from you. I use the first person pronoun because I want to speak about personal conviction. And finally, all of us have a core of beliefs that we believe passionately with all our heart. And then, I do believe. The emphasis there indicating that belief is held with passion. I believe. I do believe. Personal, passionate conviction of faith. These things that are more than just a body of beliefs to which one can point, to which one assents intellectually. No, out of the core of one's being, these things, I passionately believe. Last week, that the end is life. And this week, that the news of the grace of God in Jesus Christ is too good not to share. You see, institutional religion, when it gets regularized, always runs into the problem that there is a certain body of doctrine or belief that defines an institution or a religion. You could write a book about what Christians believe, and you could go through the various creedal statements and so forth. You could write a book about, the essence of Judaism or whatever. There does come to be a sort of corpus of belief, a body of belief that is identified with a certain movement or religion. And when that religion gets established and regularized, then it becomes identified with that body of beliefs, and it takes people into itself, whether or not there is that personal, passionate conviction. Now, don't kid me. There are some things that belong to the Christian creed about which you've never been passionate. But there are other things that you believe so strongly you'd die for it. We all have that, don't we? It's on the basis probably of our nurture or of our experience or whatever. But we all have a kind of selective, personal creed to which we passionately confess. And the problem with institutional religion is that sometimes the defined body of belief no longer connects with human experience. Or to say it another way, someone has an experience which is undeniable, but it can't be slotted in to that body of belief. And so there comes to be a tension between what one has experienced and knows to be true and what one is supposed to believe or confess because one belongs to this group or to that group. And this particular message, the news is too good not to share, comes from the fact that I personally, but us corporately, that it is claimed, I'll just speak personally, that what I believe cuts the heart out of the evangelical faith. Now, you've read that. You've heard that. If Dick Rehm is right, then the heart of the evangelical faith is lost. Well, let's walk around that for a minute. What does that say? What am I saying, first of all? Well, I'm saying that I have seen the grace of God in the face of Jesus Christ, to whom my life is committed and on whom my ministry is focused. I've said that. I've also said that I will not be so presumptuous as to say that the grace of God cannot be mediated some other way, that the Spirit of God cannot be operative in some other arena. So, because I have said that God's grace may be broader than our experience, that God's Spirit may operate beyond our tradition, that therefore I've cut the heart out of the evangelical faith. Now, do you see what really is being said? What really is being said is that if you do not believe, that one does not believe as you believe, as we believe, then one is on the way to eternal damnation. Therefore, your heart is tugged and your passion rises and you do everything possible to try to get that person saved. And if you don't believe that we have the only truth, and that everyone else is lost. If you don't believe that, then apparently you're not going to talk about the grace of God to your neighbor. Now just think about that. Is that true? Is it true that I have to not only have this marvelous experience of God's grace, but also believe that it and it alone is the truth of God? Is it necessary that I believe in that exclusive grace of God in Jesus Christ in order for me to share my faith with someone else? Why would that be the case? Is not the news too good not to share? Have we not experienced something of the goodness and the grace of God that we find ourselves spontaneously wanting to share the good news? If you get a bargain, don't you tell everybody about it? If you pull some coup in your life, don't you tell everybody about it? The only good thing I was always told I couldn't share was when I caught a fish. When I was a little kid, I'd catch a fish, I'd go with my dad and catch a fish. And I'd squeal. He'd say, "Be still. Before long, they'll all be pulling up their anchors and coming over here." Another rule of my father, if you catch it on a cricket and somebody asks you, tell them it was a worm. Now, when you're fishing, you've got to keep good news to yourself. But that's about the only area in life. Otherwise, if you've got a good experience, if you had a joy, if a delight, if something's turned you on, if it's set your tongue to singing and your feet to dancing, don't you spontaneously tell everybody about it? Don't you want to share it? Isn't the news too good not to share? Now, I would claim, with personal and passionate conviction, that the grace of God that we have experienced in Jesus Christ is such a wonderful experience, and that the life in community, in the Christian community, where there is compassion and mercy and love, where there is embrace, where there is worship before the majesty and the mystery of God, where there is this wonderful ethereal experience full of alleluias and hallelujahs and all of the wonder of our life together, where there is that personal solitude and moments of contemplation, where I know I am at peace with God, where I have experienced the grace of God so to such an extent that I know that there is nothing in all of creation that could ever separate me from the love of God. When I live with my family, with my children, with my grandchildren, when I think about all that is mine and all of that that I have gotten because of the nurture, because of the tradition that is mine, that has shaped me, when I think of all of that, then I think, good grief, isn't that news too good not to tell? Of course I'm going to tell that good news. How can I help but express it? But people are funny. This isn't a Protestant problem or a Catholic problem or a Jewish problem. It's a human problem. It is somehow or other a desire to gain power and to control, to define who's in and who's out, that has been a great disruptor of religious experience down through the centuries. For example, the story of the man born blind. What a marvelous story it is. Remember now that the one who put this gospel together was writing for a specific community just as concretely as this sermon is prepared for you. This sermon is not for any other congregation. This sermon is for you. This preacher has you on his heart. This preacher has you in his head. This preacher can't say a word without you being the focus. No different with this fourth gospel. Now we're in the last decade of the first century, as I mentioned last week. It's been 60-some years since Jesus died and rose again. The Jesus Jews, the Jews who believe Jesus was the Messiah, they are finding it more and more difficult to hold on in faith. They were expecting him to return. Jesus thought it would soon be over. Paul thought it would soon be over. They all thought it would soon be over. And it wasn't soon over. Nothing was happening. Now, about 60 years later, these are Jews who believe Jesus was the Messiah. But something had happened about 20 years prior. The temple had been destroyed by Rome. The cultic center in Jerusalem was no more. What would Judaism of the future look like? Would it be the Jews who believed Jesus was the Messiah who would come to the ascendancy? They were a strong movement. Or would it be the rabbis, the teachers of the law, the scribes, the Pharisees? Well, as a matter of fact, it became that branch of Judaism that consolidated power, that gave to the Judaism of the future its identity, that determined what it was to be a Jew. That group. And what happens in a group like that? Again, it's not a Jewish problem, although this was an intra-Jewish squabble. It's not a Jewish problem, it's a human problem. If I get in control, it feels good. And I like to consolidate my power. And so I like to draw the lines so that I determine who's in and who's out. And as the rabbinic Jewish movement emerged as the ascendant Jewish party, it defined Judaism. And when you define who's in and you define who's out. Three times in this gospel, the words "put out of the synagogue" are used. Specifically in the lesson I read a moment ago, when the Pharisees come to the parents to verify that this indeed is their son and that he was, yes, indeed born blind, they say, "What happened?" And the parents say, well, the father was all ready to give the answer, and his wife yanked at his sleeve and said, "Don't say anything already." And so he went. They said, she got him aside. She said, "If you acknowledge that Jesus did this, then it's the same as saying that Jesus is the Messiah. And if you confess Jesus as the Messiah, we're out of the synagogue. Then where do we go for potlucks on Friday night? So be still already." So he said, "He's of age. Ask him. I should know. I don't know. Ask him." Of course they knew, but they weren't stupid. What's going on there? It's obvious what's going on there. They do not confess what they believe, because the consequence would be they'd lose the only spiritual home they'd ever known, the synagogue, their observant Jewish status. So they have to go back to the gentleman whom they had spoken to earlier. Earlier, he was a little fuzzy about things. He said, "I don't know where he's from. His name is Jesus. He put clay on my eyes and I see." They said, "It's impossible." He said, "I don't know. Put clay on my eyes and I see." "Well, what do you think he is?" "He's a prophet." Well, then they go to the parents, but now the parents put him off and now they're back with him again. And they say, "Tell us now, under oath, give God glory, under oath, tell us what happened." He said, "I already told you. You want to hear it again? You want to be his disciple?" Then they got nasty. The Greek word behind that "revile" is a nasty word. They began to abuse him, because now they're really angry. They're not looking at this gentleman who now has sight, who had been blind, whose experience cannot fit into their preconceived idea of what is true. They can't step back a moment and face to face with a blind man see. They cannot say, in the light of that experience, "Let's go back and read our tradition again." Rather, they get angry, because now it's a control problem. It's a power issue. It's who has authority. And so they revile it. And they say, you follow Jesus, but we follow Moses. And he just looks at him. He said, I don't know. I only know one thing. I was blind. And now I see. Cast him out. Because when you have a tradition or a set of beliefs, a paradigm of understanding, and then you have concrete human experience, and when you cannot put the two together any longer, and you are in authority and in power supervising the established and received paradigm, the last thing in the world that you will allow is the experience that says your paradigm doesn't work anymore. So, they cast him out. John's little community of Jews that believed Jesus was the Messiah, they were starting to give up. They were starting to lose faith. Jesus didn't come. And authoritative voices were saying they were wrong. And they saw the possibility of being alienated from their spiritual roots and tradition. They were starting to waver. And so this preacher in the community, he says, I want to write a story of Jesus for you. Because I want you to know that's what's happening to you 60 years down the line isn't any different than what happened to Jesus. Because if you go into John 16, you'll find Jesus saying, they will put you out of the synagogue. John writes the story of Jesus in light of that little community just as much as I'm crafting this sermon in light of this community. And John is saying to that community of people who believe that Jesus is the Messiah, Jesus is the Messiah. I've gathered these things together. I've written this story. I could have gathered other things. I could have put in other details. I put these things together. I painted this picture in order that you might believe that Jesus is the Messiah and believing have life in His name. I'm telling you the story of Jesus again because you're about to let it go. You're about to be hammered into submission. Don't you do it. Don't you forget Jesus. This was the Word of God made flesh. This was the embodiment of the love of God in human flesh. This one is the way. This one is the truth. This one is the life. This one is the way to God. Don't you let go of Jesus. Don't you let go of Jesus for anybody. Don't you deny your experience. We were blind and now we see. Jesus is the light of the world. Now don't you give up. That news was too good not to tell. And I want to say that my favorite meeting in all the year are the 3 or 4 or 5 elders meetings we have around here. Because when I look into your faces, I've seen most of you come through one time or another. I've heard your stories. I've seen your tears. I've heard your voice crack. I've seen you throw your head back and laugh. I've heard you tell about the grace of God. I've heard you tell about the love of God that's touched you in this community. I've heard your singing. I've seen your dancing. I have lived with you long enough to know that there is some reality here. There is some joy here. There is some goodness here. There is some truth here. And I don't know where else It's happening. Wherever it's happening, God bless it. But I know this. There's good news here, and it's too good not to tell. There was a time in my experience when I was blind, but now I see. There was a time in my experience when my religion was a burden, but now it's a joy. There was a time in my life when it weighed me down, but it has set me free. There is a grace of God, a wonder of the love of God. There is a concreteness of community, of compassion. My God, people, the news is simply too good not to tell. Do we have a story? Do we have a story?